a potential amnesty from prosecution for security force members who served in the Northern Ireland Troubles is to be floated by the government. The statute of limitations proposal has been inserted into a public consultation document on potential mechanisms for dealing with a toxic legacy of the Troubles. The move has angered Sinn Féin, which has accused the government of an act of bad faith. Here's what Gerry Adams said after meeting Prime Minister Theresa May yesterday.
We're very concerned that without due notice to us, or indeed we understand to the Irish government, that the consultation document which the British are going to bring forward about the Stormont House Agreement Bill, and remember the Stormont House Agreement is what all of the parties, including the DUP, signed up to, particularly on the issue of legacy. But we understand there's now a new section, which is about an amnesty for British Crown Forces.
But the Ulster Unionist MLA Doug Beattie has said that a statute of limitations cannot and should not lead to a general amnesty that would include terrorists. He's with us now. Doug, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, good morning. And Gerry Kelly from Sinn Féin. Good morning to you, Gerry.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, your reaction to this, Gerry Kelly?
Well, I think Gerry Adams has said it. There was talk with the British government through a long period, right back to the Stormont House Agreement, in terms of preparing a bill for a consultation. At no time during that period was this issue raised by the British government, or did we get any warning that they were going to do this. They have simply grafted on a piece which essentially does mean, the statute of limitations does mean an amnesty for the British state forces. And it runs entirely against the Good Friday Agreement and entirely against any spirit of trying to get the issue of legacy. You said earlier Sinn Féin were angry. I can tell you that the victims of state violence are extremely angry, and here they are getting another blow on top of the refusing to give over information for up to 45 years in quest. All the people waiting for decades for some sort of truth, never mind the issue of justice.
What about the victims of IRA violence, Gerry?
Well, that's the same. The institutions were set up to deal with all of it. Sinn Féin's position from many, many years ago was a truth commission. We went through a number of negotiations, eventually at the Stormont House Agreement, what was agreed by all the parties, which included the UUP and the DUP, and all the other parties, was that we would have these institutions which could deal with all of the issues, including bringing forth truth and investigative processes in the HIU.
If we look at this, the NIO statement that they've sent to the Nolan Show, I'll read you a particular part of it, get your reaction. Here's what the NIO told the Nolan Show. They said, the government believes that the Stormont House Agreement proposals represent the best means of addressing Northern Ireland's past in ways that will be fair, balanced and proportionate. So that bit you'd be happy enough with. But here's,
no, because it isn't fair, balanced and proportionate.
Well, hold on a moment. Here's the twist. However, we acknowledge that others have different views on the best way forward, such as those proposed by the House of Commons Defence Committee, which do not involve recourse to the criminal justice system. In the spirit of open and meaningful consultation, it is right that the government listens to all views. Now, when they say we acknowledge that others have different views on the best way forward, I wonder, are they talking about the DUP?
Well, I presume the DUP is heavily involved in this. As I understand it, Emma Pingelly and one other DUP signed up to a private member's bill, which reflects what we're talking about here. And Emma Pingelly was in the centre of the negotiations around the legacy over a number of years. So it is clearly a bad faith process, both by the British government and the DUP.
Let me also say this.
You know, you see, anybody can write into a consultation with any opinion they want. This is the British government grafting on to a bill which was already complete, a new section, which, when you put it into a consultation paper like that, there you are showing the intent of the British government. So that's the big danger in all of it.
But you can call it bad faith if you like, as can Sinn Féin. That's your prerogative. Here's the bottom line: if you don't have a government in Northern Ireland, and therefore the leverage of, well, look, if you do this, the government will fall apart. If you do this, we won't agree. How are you going to stop any of this?
Well, lots of people disagree in terms of that. But if you're talking about the talks issue, we have been through a whole process of talks over a period of 10 months. And it was said very clearly to the British Prime Minister yesterday that, there's no point and no public confidence in going back into that hamster wheel, if you like, if there's not going to be meaningful talks.
But this is the DUP flexing the muscle that they have with the British government. And
you're absolutely correct, Stephen. It is, of course, flexing the muscles with the British.
Meanwhile, you're on the sidelines. You can do nothing about it.
Well, we're not on the sidelines. You know, we are have a substantial mandate. We will use that mandate, and we will argue our case at every type of forum. There has been a call. And remember, these issues that are in the talks, like the Irish Language Act, Marriage Equality, the Bill of Rights, and the Legacy Inquest funding issues, are all issues which are an obligation of the British government as well. They're not just down to the DUP. So the British government really are being wagged by the tail in terms of this. We have called for an intergovernmental conference under the Good Friday Agreement, and both governments, in the circumstances we're in now, should be working at this. They should be bringing forward what is the substantial difference to the negotiations as it is now, instead of as it looks in terms of at least legacy, rolling over to a DUP demand.
If we look at this, by the way, you've got to agree with the Stormont House Agreement, don't you? Because it was between you and Sinn Féin.
Well, we do agree with the Stormont House Agreement. So, I mean,
it was between you and the DUP, of course, well, I meant to say.
Well, one of the issues, and it's well you raised that, because it does raise another point. One of the issues about all of these talks, Stephen, was that what happened with the RHI and with the accusations of corruption, NAMA and all that, what happened when Martin McGuinness stood down? Was because agreements had been made between parties in agreements, and then the DUP reneged on them. That's the difficulty. So it's not simply as, you know, here's another set of talks. This was about the implementation of agreements already made.
I'm looking at this House of Commons Defence Committee report. In which these legal experts are cited, Professor McAvoy, Professor Rowe, who say that any statute would need to apply to both state and non-state actors, and would need to incorporate a truth recovery mechanism. Did you not know about any of this? Did you not know that any of this data, information, commentary was being collected?
Well, it's not the first time that stuff like this has been floated, but what we are dealing with now, it certainly wasn't floated during the negotiations, but if you go way back from Peter Hayne and all of that, you can see that it was attempted one time before to bring in legislation again at the last minute when no one was consulted on it in terms of that there, and the legislation failed at that point. But let's be very clear about it. Do we know what it means? Yes, we do know what it means. Amnesties, everybody said getting in and coming out the other end of this, including all the parties, including Doug's Beattie Party, Beattie's party and all the rest, said this should be victim-centred. What this is saying from unionism is that the only victims that count are the victims that are not were not killed.
Well, no, the point is that these legal experts are saying that an amnesty would have to, a statute of limitations, in other words, would have to apply to non-state actors as well as state actors.
And the families...
Non-state
right across,
actors.
I know, I'm listening to you. But the families right across the board, The victims community, wherever they come from, are against it. That's the key. If we said we were doing this for the victims and survivors, then we should do it for the victims and survivors. And this is not doing that. This is taking one section of them and forgiving everything that the state's done.
Doug Beattie, listening to this, your reaction to this, Doug. Good morning to you. Ulster Unionist Party MLA, obviously.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen. I think it's incredible that here we have Gerry Kelly, when he knows that his leader only in September said that jailing the IRA killer of Tom Oliver would be counterproductive. And now this fake outrage about something like this has been open source since April of this year, and you could quite easily go on and see it. In fact, the statement that you read out is an open statement which has been available since the 14th of this month. Can I maybe just give a little bit of context to this, Stephen, please, for a couple of moments? What actually happened was in April that the Defence Select Committee met to look about legacy issues and to try and address the imbalance that we have, where we have terrorists who are given shortened sentences, royal prerogatives of mercy, Gerry has one himself, and OTR letters, which Gerry has been the postman for. And they come up with a recommendation that we should look at a statute of limitations. And you're absolutely right. Two law professors said that if you give a statute of limitation to state actors, it has to go to non-state actors. That means that they have recommended an amnesty. We cannot support any form of amnesty. Victims don't deserve an amnesty. There should not be an amnesty. And that's quite clear. If you break the law, you face the law. Be you a soldier, be you a policeman, be you a member of the public, be you a politician. So that's incredibly important. But let me just tell you something, Stephen. Here is a difficulty we have, and here is a bigger issue here that people need to understand. The HIU, which was agreed by the DUP and Sinn Féin, which we did not agree to, will investigate 1,600 killings only. And of those, they will reinvestigate every single killing by the state, not every killing by the terrorists. But they will not investigate people who have lost limbs, people who have got life-changing injuries. They will all be forgotten about. This is absolutely disgraceful. And if we are saying victim-centric, then it has to be victim-centric for all victims, not just a few. And those people whose lives have been absolutely ruined from the 70s because of bombs set off by the terrorists will not even get a look in the present proposals.
I'm reading from, Doug, this House of Commons Defence Committee, where Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, DUP's, obviously Geoffrey Donaldson is cited as having said that this such a statute would not, he insisted, amount to an amnesty and would only apply to soldiers and police officers who have previously been the subject of full police investigations. As such, it would not create reciprocal protection or amnesty for former paramilitary combatants. As Sir Geoffrey emphasised, the Stormont House Agreement, quote, made clear that there would be no amnesty for terrorist-related crimes. Rather, he stressed, the proposal for a statute of limitations was an attempt to protect the men and women who served our country and who were not provided with a special provision that had been previously made for terrorists.
Yes, and I've got to say, Geoffrey may well have thought that that was going to be the case, but what he's now presiding over is something which will be a general amnesty. And that's the reality to it. Where he is right is there is an imbalance here, whereas we can chase after and we will reinvestigate every killing by the state, the police, the RUC. We will cite Article 2, the right to life, as a reason for that, but we will not reinvestigate the killings of soldiers, police, and security forces for the same reason, even though there's an Article 2 compliant reason to do so.
Jerry Kelly, do you want to respond to that?
I want to ask Doug, because I'm getting a bit confused about his position on this. Is Doug arguing, I've heard him argue before, that anyone under the law who was involved, whether they're in state forces or not, who were involved in illegal activity, should be brought to justice. I think I heard him say that. Is that what he's saying today? He's saying that today.
Jerry, let me. You know, I can't say this.
I'm just. It's a simple question. Do you believe that anyone who broke the law, who killed people, should be brought to justice or not?
Well, Jerry, you're talking in contradictions here, Doug. No, absolutely not. You need to be listening, because I said quite clearly, anybody who breaks the law faces the law, be they soldier, policeman, member of the public, or politician.
If you didn't hear that, I'm sorry, you've heard it now,
because that's exactly what I've said. I'll tell you what.
I heard it very clearly, and that's why I wanted you to repeat it. Because if you ask for a statute of limitations, or you ask for an amnesty, then you're saying a complete contradiction to what you're after saying. You're saying that some people should be brought under the law and some people shouldn't.
But Jerry, I've just said to you that I do not support an amnesty. Well, what are you missing here?
You said you support a statute of limitations.
No, I didn't.
You're saying that certain people should not be.
No, I did not.
You don't support it. Okay, forgive me.
Well, you got it absolutely wrong. What I said is we need balance. So here, let me give you the balance here,
okay.
Jerry.
And I'll give you some too. Go ahead.
Let's remove all the OTR letters. Let's take them away. Let's take away that OTR letter that was given to the main suspect of the killing of Gareth O'Connor. Now, you know about that because you gave him that letter. So let's remove all of these OTR letters. Let's remove all of these pardons. Let's outline the sentencing laws so that we understand that somebody who could be responsible for mass killings will only get a maximum of 2 years. That should be the case then for any soldier who is then found guilty of a killing. So that should be outlined. And let's make sure that if we're going to reinvestigate all of the killings under Article 2 that were conducted by the state forces, let's do exactly the same for those killings by terrorists.
Let's talk about balance, Duke, because I can tell you that between 25 and 35,000 over the internet, well, let me finish, because you've made your point and I'll listen to you, right? Have gone through the courts, have done hundreds of thousands of years in jail. I can nearly name all the people on the state side who have gone through the courts, and some of them who were convicted. There was only a handful convicted of murder who were British soldiers. Not only were released early, some of them within 2 years, but actually were put back into the army, accepted back into the army, even though they were found guilty of murder, and then were promoted within that and sent to other places to fight wars. Now, if you want to talk about balance, the balance sheet is well down for the state forces. Let me be very, very clear about that. And when you talk about Bloody Sunday or the New Lodge 6 massacre or Ballymurphy massacre or Spring Hill massacre, not a thing has been done to bring those people to justice. So if you want to talk about balance, then let's be honest.
So are you saying because lots of Republicans were jailed in the past, Gerry, there shouldn't be any investigations now?
No, I'm not saying there shouldn't be any investigations. I have told you I have signed up to, as Sinn Féin has signed up to, the Stormont House Agreement, which deals with a number of institutions, including an investigative institution, which I don't know about Doug, but Union has certainly argued very strongly for. I was at the negotiations, including the Haas negotiations, right, who argued very strongly for. They said that we came to an agreement in terms of that. Now we seem to be moving away from that. Part of unionism, at least, seems to be moving away from that there. But that's what was agreed at the Stormont House Agreement, and I stand over that.
Let me just ask you, Gerry, because I know you've got to go soon. Just get your reaction to what Arlene Foster said when she left 10 Downing Street and described the Sinn Féin's party conference last week and what happened. It is disgraceful to look at the glorification of IRA terrorism, she said. Let's have a listen.
We did say to the Prime Minister that we felt the glorification of terrorism at the weekend at Sinn Féin's conference was making it more difficult to bring around devolution. You know, it was quite disgraceful to look at the glorification that happened at the weekend of IRA terrorism. And of course that makes it more difficult for us. But we are committed to devolution. We want to see it working and we will continue to work at it.
What's your reaction to that?
I'll tell you what. First of all, just to say, I'll talk about Arlene Foster in a moment. People, at core of all of this, even this discussion we're only after coming through, is that we have different narratives for what happened during the conflict. But the one thing that should not be in dispute, but of course unionism is disputing it, political unionism certainly is disputing it, is that you are able to show a respect in remembering and talking about people that you've lost in that conflict. Now, let me go there and Arlene Foster and the DUP. They have no respect for victims of state violence. I mean, Martin McGuinness made no secret of his membership and pride of being in the IRA. Arlene Foster knew that as far back as the Good Friday Agreement. Unionists knew that as far back there. Paisley knew that, and Arlene Foster knew that when, in 2007, they formed a government. She knew it when she went in terms of this. She talks now, when she's a joint minister, as if she doesn't know any of that. She rightly went to Martin's funeral to show respect. This is a distraction and excuses. The DUP were not up for the deal before the RDS. Saying that this makes it harder, I don't even understand. I mean, it's a part of the difficulty. And I'll say this about Martin McGuinness.
But if you don't understand it, Gerry, is that not the problem? And to this extent, that for park the DUP for a moment, for the victims of the IRA and their families to watch that Ardèche and to see an organisation called the IRA who were responsible for destruction, for murder on the streets of Northern Ireland.
Martin, and
that rapturous applause for murder and destruction.
It was an applause for Martin McGuinness, who is highly respected. And Martin McGuinness is the biggest name.
It's a plus for his role in the IRA, Jerry.
Let me finish. No, I know what you're talking about. But Martin McGuinness led from the front in struggle. He led from the front in seeking peace. He led from the front in seeking reconciliation. And he led from the front in political life.
And I think there would be many people. I think there might be many people, many unionists who would agree with that. But in terms of the IRA, Jerry, can you understand how victims would have found that distasteful?
I mean, I've put this to you many, many times. Have you ever said, or even asked the question, the people who were killed by state violence in the UDR and the RUC and the British Army and loyalist death squads who were through collusion, look at Loch and Eilert and all that. You have never put that to a British. You have a British soldier on the other phone.
Well, we should be asking the question.
Well, here's the problem. In respect, there has to be equality as well.
Okay.
And people need to be allowed to grieve, to remember. The people who they have lost.
One final question. Jerry Adams says he feels an affinity with victims of the IRA. Do you?
During the conflict, well, the easy answer is yes.
And can you explain to me what you mean by that? How could you feel an affinity to victims of the IRA?
Because if you have lost anyone, and I have lost people very close to me during the conflict, then you understand grief. You understand what conflict does. You understand, you may disagree that, you know, as many people will, that I joined the IRA. I maybe disagree with many people who joined the British Army, et cetera, et cetera. But there is an understanding, and this is part of the problem with political unionism at least, is they find it very difficult to step into the shoes of either combatants on the other side or victims on the other side. So it is not hard for me to understand grief, and it is not hard for me to understand loss, because I faced it myself, as many, many Republicans did. But I do not use that. I don't discriminate. I don't think then, if a British soldier or a police officer or whoever was killed, that their families do not suffer the same. The difficulty here is that political unionism cannot deal with the fact that other people can suffer in exactly the same way.
Jerry, I know you need to go, so thank you very much indeed for coming on this morning. Kieran McAvoy is Professor of Law and Transitional Justice at Queen's University, cited in this report. We were talking about the House of Commons Defence Committee report. Good morning to you, Kieran.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So if we go back, I went off on a tangent there. If we go back to this report and what Sir Geoffrey was talking about during an Opposition Day debate on historical cases involving armed forces personnel, he raised this idea of a statute of limitations. Could that apply to state forces and not to non-state actors?
I mean, in a word, no. As you know, I gave evidence to the Defence Select Committee and essentially said that. So what's being proposed, the statute of limitations for state actors only, is what's known in legal terms as a self-amnesty. And it's where, in effect, you are giving an amnesty to the state forces who fought on the side of the state, but not to other actors. Now, in international law, courts will have a degree of sympathy to states which are involved in genuine efforts at reconciliation, and sometimes amnesties are part of that, albeit they have to be accompanied by some kind of truth recovery process. But if the kind of self-amnesty that's being proposed here has been described as the UN by the UN as embodying impunity, it's the kind of thing, for example, that was done by military dictatorships in Brazil, in Chile, in Argentina, and indeed Robert Mugabe's government in Zimbabwe introduced a similar style of self-amnesty for ZANU-PF forces. So that's the territory.
You're drawing a parallel between what Sir Geoffrey Donaldson is proposing and Robert Mugabe's proposals.
In legal terms, yes, that's what's being proposed here. Now the question then becomes: well, if you were obviously at the end of the day, the UK government, the UK Parliament rather, is sovereign. So the Parliament can introduce any act of Parliament that it wishes, and that's the evidence that I gave to the Select Committee, and they reiterate that in the report. But the consequences of introducing a self amnesty for state forces means that in effect, it's hard to envisage any successful prosecutions of non-state, of paramilitary actors as a result of that. And there are a number of
why.
Well, it's a complicated enough reason. First of all, if you take, for example, cases of collusion, so the steak knife investigation that's ongoing is a good illustration. So in that context, if, for example, after John Boucher has completed his investigation, he then passes on evidence to the DPP, says, OK, we think we've enough to prosecute X, Y, and Z here. If you have, in that context, you have your statute of limitations where the handlers, where the army, the intelligence services or others are protected, there is no way that you're going to make a prosecution stick against any of the paramilitary actors. So, and the case will be spoiled, in effect, because of the presence of the amnesty in that case. And indeed, you would have defence lawyers arguing in cases of collusion, my client was acting on behalf of the state. My client is a state agent. My client, therefore, is entitled to the same protection as other state actors. The other legal reasons why it won't hold water is that part of the rationale for the introduction of the private members bill and the recommendation coming from the Defence Select Committee is that it's about a rebalancing. The argument is that the processes to date have been too state-centric and that this is a rebalancing act. And those arguments, at the level of political rhetoric, they might work, but a court of law is not political rhetoric, and so the viability of those arguments will all be tested.
Well, you see, here's what therefore then confuses me, because you know, you're a professor of law. Presumably the government have got some quite eminent professors and lawyers to advise them.
I think that's an excellent question.
So why do we have this NIO statement saying that they're going to look at these proposals in the spirit of open and meaningful consultation? It's right that the government listens to all views. Now, why would the NIO be putting this out to consultation if you're saying it's legally impossible? And why would the government... This is the same government being propped up by the DUP, isn't it? Why would the government be doing this?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that the arguments put forward by Sinn Féin and the government of the Republic that this wasn't part of the negotiations at Stormont House are accurate. That is true. It's very clear that none of the participants during the negotiations argued for an amnesty. I don't know what's in the minds of the British government. I can see, however, from... this is a public consultation happening on these legacy mechanisms. And I can see from one perspective, it's obviously in the political ether anyway. You've had, as you know, a very vociferous campaign by veterans, by British Army veterans, that an amnesty or a statute of limitations should be introduced for them. So I guess there would be people within, I don't know, they can speak for themselves, but I'm imagining there would be people within the Northern Ireland office saying, this is going to be part of this public conversation anyway, because it's already been a very vociferous campaign. Therefore, we are formalising that this will be part of the conversation, even though it very obviously wasn't part of the Stormont House negotiations. This is a public consultation. If during the process of the public consultation, it's clear that the views of the public are that a self-amnesty for state actors, which in effect means that there will be no prosecutions of non-state actors, is too high a price to pay, then there might be people saying, well, OK, fair enough, that if the public come to that conclusion, let's have the conversation. The legal arguments will get teased out as part of the public conversation, and then we will know that this is not a runner and that the recommendation of the Defence Select Committee is not a runner for these reasons. I can see how people had that argument, even though it was not in the Stormont House Agreement.
One final question, Kieran, because we're heading to the news here. Sir Geoffrey Donaldson seems to be saying this statute that he is proposing would not amount to an amnesty because it would only apply to soldiers and police officers who, quote, have been previously the subject of full police investigations.
I mean, an amnesty is a negation of criminal or civil liability. And so however you term it, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, Stephen, it's a duck. And I think we should be very honest, particularly with victims. Victims will be very exercised by these suggestions. And I think we just need to have a very honest, grown-up conversation about this. Number one, if we are talking about a self-amnesty here, then let's call it that. A statute of limitations is a self-amnesty. Secondly, if we introduce this, if this gets introduced...
Well, not according to Sir Geoffrey, who relies on the fact that these soldiers and police officers would have been subject to full police investigations.
But to be honest, as Sir Geoffrey knows, a big issue around all of the legacy debates is that proper investigations were not carried out. at different junctures. As you'll be aware, for example, in the period up to 1973, where over half the military killings took place, the investigations during that period were done by the military police. They were not done by the RUC. That position changed at the insistence of the Director of Public Prosecutions. So half of all state killings half of all army killings were not properly investigated at the time. No one really makes a legal argument that they were. So this question about what is an investigation goes to the very crux of this. And so the whole rationale for establishing the Historical Investigations Unit as part of the Stormont House Agreement was that we have to have proper investigations using contemporary legal and forensic techniques to do these investigations. So that proper investigations argument, I'm afraid, won't hold water.
Okay, interesting. Professor Kieran McAvoy, thank you.